UK Wine Show, show number 131. Chris Unger on wine and environment. On this week's award-winning wine show, we're talking with Chris Unger from Negociants on wine and being good to the environment.
And in the news, Argentina wins Best Fair Trade Wine Award, Majestic sales slump, and Oz Clark tops the polls as best known wino.
G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 131 for the 14th of November 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show we're talking with Chris Unger. Chris is the sales manager for Negociants in the UK, the Australian-owned importer of Yalumbra. Yalumbra have set up a life cycle system for managing not only the environmental implications of growing grapes, shipping the wine to the final market, and looking at ways of reducing waste in the final market. We talked to Chris about the life cycle system, and in the spotlight, we finish up looking at yeast by looking at how yeast can change the flavour and texture of wine. And in the quote this week, it's another champagne quote: "My only regret in life is I did not drink more champagne." Great quote. Who said that? Clues throughout the show, answer at the end. But next up, we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. At the 2008 Fairtrade Wine Competition this week, Argentina won Best Overall Fairtrade Wine and Best Fairtrade Red with the 2005 Soluna Premium Malbec, while South Africa won the award for Best Fairtrade White with the Isabello Chenin Blanc 2008. The three other award winners were Sainsbury's South African Pinotage, Co-op Argentine Pinot Grigio, and Chile's Equality by Las Lomas Sauvignon Blanc. The competition's in its second year and aims to raise awareness for Fairtrade wines and acknowledge the quality they offer. Entries are received from the three Fairtrade producing countries, Argentina, Chile and South Africa. These five award-winning wines will be on show during the Fairtrade and Fabulous activity planned by Vinopolis in London to coincide with Fairtrade Fortnight, which takes place between February the 23rd and March the 8th, 2009.
Fairtrade's slowly but surely been making inroads into the mainstream wine world and often provides an ethically sourced wine at a reasonable price. In this current economic climate, it provides opportunities to drink great wines at reasonable prices. The pressure on pricing is going to grow over the next 6 months, so Majestic are having problems. What's going on there, Jane?
Yep, well, the UK's leading chain of wine warehouses has seen its first drop in sales since it began trading and admits it is facing a challenging Christmas after like-for-like sales in UK stores dropped 2.1% in the 6 months to the end of September. Sales have slumped even faster in the last 5 weeks, falling by 4.7%. And it's champagne that's contributing to this decline, falling by 6.4% in the 6 months to September, and also weaker demand from restaurants and other corporate customers. On a more positive note, Majestic say that sales to private customers have increased by 2.9% over the 6 months.
As Jane said, Majestic are blaming it on a decrease in corporate activity. In our wine tasting business, we've just completed our biggest month ever for October, and November's going to beat it. What we have noticed is that staff socials are down, but not necessarily client entertainment. Perhaps Majestic wines are being sold to corporates more for their Friday night drinks than client entertainment. What's the last news story, Jane?
A new survey by Wine Intelligence in the UK has revealed that Oz Clark is the UK's best-known wine critic, but still only 18% of the 1,500 regular wine drinkers that were questioned actually recognised his name. Oz first made his name with the BBC Food and Drink Show in the 80s and has appeared on our screens more recently alongside James May of Top Gear in their Big Wine Adventure series touring France and California. The runner-up on the list of experts was Ollie Smith, who's a regular on BBC's Saturday Kitchen, confirming that wine critics who appear on television are far more recognised than traditional wine writers. Not far behind Ollie were Sarah Jane Evans and Matthew Jukes, followed by Super Plonk author Malcolm Gluck in fifth place, and Jancis Robinson in sixth. That's it from me this week, but don't forget you can get these stories in full at our website 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. Oz is a nice guy, and I don't think there's any surprise to many people in the trade that he is the best-known wine critic. We interviewed Oz way back in show number 25, along with Ollie in show number 89, Matthew Jukes in show 28, and Jancis Robinson, most recently in show 125 and 130. Just Sarah Jane Evans and Malcolm Gluck left to get the full set now. All these famous wine writers and critics still don't have a famous quote. Unlike the person in our quote, if you recall, the quote was, "My only regret is that I did not drink more champagne." Now, this person we're talking about is a famous British economist who was born in Cambridge in 1893 and passed on in 1946. His key book was known as The General Theory of Employment, Interest and Money. And in 1942, in recognition of his brilliant mind and work, he was raised to the House of Lords as a baron. Any joy? Well, economics is very much a battle of survival of the fittest. In winemaking, yeast is also battling to dominate the fermentation. In this week's spotlight, we're going to be looking at yeast and how they can change wine. Different types of yeast change the way the wine tastes. The following list is different yeast strain characteristics that winemakers can use to select different types of yeasts. You can get yeast that are vigorous fermenters. Vigorous fermenters are valued because the resulting short fermentation period means that wine is protected by ethanol more quickly, reducing the number of spoilage organisms that can gain a foothold during fermentation. Ethanol tolerant. This type of yeast is reserved for yeast that can be fermented above 15%. This allows the winemaker to ferment very, very ripe grapes. Cold tolerant yeasts are another type that can normally ferment below 10 degrees Celsius. This is most suitable for white wine making, where lower temperatures are more common to preserve the aromatics. Sulfur dioxide tolerant yeast is the final type and is usually used when fruit arrives into the winery in poor condition and adding some sulfur dioxide is required to preserve that fruit. It should be remembered that malolactic bacteria is also sensitive to sulfur dioxide, so may create problems further down the winemaking process. Apart from these yeasts which have tolerances to certain environmental characteristics, yeasts can be selected for different fermentation products, such as to change the mouthfeel and the aroma of the wine. When I describe these, I'm going to use the word production, but it simply refers to yeast creating more of these type of molecules than other types of yeasts. So you can get ester producers. During fermentation, the yeast can create different esters, which are aromatics responsible for fruity, floral, and perfumed wines. The amount of esters produced varies depending on the yeast strain and the fermentation conditions. Glycerol producers is another type of yeast groupings and increases the mouthfeel with a broader, richer, silkier feeling wine and longer finish, similar to glycerol. Some yeasts release mannoproteins and are deemed to add to the mouthfeel of wine. Another type of molecule yeast can produce is a beta-glucoside acidity. These are noticeable in wines with relatively high concentrations of terpen components, such as Gewürztraminer, various muscats, and Sauvignon Blanc. This enzyme activity increases the expression of any grape variety. And finally, metabolize malic acid. Some strains of yeast can actually metabolize malic acid, reducing the total acidity and the pH in the final wine without producing those buttery flavors conventionally associated with bacterial malolactic fermentation. Woo! That ends this week's look at yeast. Yeast survival is based on the supply of nutrients such as nitrogen. In a way, it follows the basic laws of economics, supply and demand. The famous person who wrote this week's quote helped develop those rules of supply and demand. In fact, his views on macroeconomics have developed its own subfield. Just to recap what the quote was, "My only regret in life is that I did not drink more champagne." Have you got any ideas? Next up, we're going to have the interview with Chris Unger. We're going to be talking to him about the life cycle model for wine and the environment. Chris Unger is the sales manager at Negotiants UK. They are the Australian-owned importer of Yalumbra and a number of other New World wines. He is a fully trained winemaker and produced wine for 7 years before coming to the UK. We're going to be talking to Chris about Yalumbra and how other wineries in the Hillsmith Family Vineyards portfolio try to be environmentally friendly. Let's have a listen to what he has to say. Hi, I'm here with Chris Unger from Negotiants. Negotiants owned by the Hillsmith family vineyards, which includes Yalumbra, which is one of my favourites, particularly the Viogniers I love. How are you, Chris?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, great.
Excellent. You've just done a presentation at Wines of Australia on environmental aspects in wine. Something I wouldn't mind touching on and getting a bit more detail about is the life cycle model you touched on. What exactly is the life cycle model?
So yeah, it's an adoption of the environmental management system, which looks at the practices in the vineyard from right down from the soil through to the water, to the growing, to the machinery that we use, and how we can better look after the environment in which we're operating, I guess.
Do you go all the way to the end, the wine's produced, it's in a bottle now, or do you even go any further than that?
Yeah, we do. That's the life cycle approach. So we look at from the establishment of the vineyard right down to the end consumer and the packaging that they may have at the end and the recycling of that packaging.
One of the key things in the UK, which I'm sure you're probably aware of, is that green glass is not green in the UK. It's quite bad because we don't really have an outlet for all this glass that's arriving into the country. Some people have been positioning it maybe as bulk importing a wine and then bottling in the UK, because then at least you'll use some of that green glass, because you can't, once it's been coloured green, it's not really good for anything else apart from green.
Yeah. I mean, we will never, not in the foreseeable future, we will never bottle away from our wineries, from where we produce our wines. We like to have the control on how those wines are bottled and how they're looked after. But I guess we're looking at alternative, packagings looking at lightweighting our glass, how we can better sort of reduce that impact of that green glass. But yeah, in the foreseeable future, we won't be shipping our wine over in bulk and bulking in the bottling in the UK.
Have you ever thought about using clear glass then?
I mean, we use clear glass for a few of our products, like in the rosés and things like that. But I guess it's also, you know, protecting the wines from light as well. I mean, in our premium products, you can't put one of our top reds in a clear glass. It's the green glass protects it from those UV rays. So we wouldn't do that. And I guess it's all product specific.
Some people in supermarkets have been trialing PET bottles, plastic bottles for wine. Maybe not necessarily Yalumbra, because you guys are normally reasonably premium.
As far as I know, we haven't looked into it. I can't imagine that's the way we want to go. I think at the moment glass is our option. I mean, obviously we look at different seals and things like that for the glass. But
I actually quite like the idea of clear glass for immediate drinking wines.
Yeah, definitely. For early consumption and things like that, I can't see it being a problem. But I think it all comes down to where that product's going to end up and what price and you know what the consumer wants, I guess, ultimately.
You talk about downsizing your glass. What exactly do you mean by that?
Making lighter glass, basically. So reducing the thickness, I guess, trying to maintain the integrity of that bottle. Less glass, but also we want to maintain the strength of the bottle and the integrity of that bottle as well. We can't lose the strength of that either.
I was reading that glass manufacture, you know, from the sand, the silica sand all the way through, is actually really energy intensive as a method, and therefore it's quite CO2 intensive as well. So anything where you can reduce the weight of the glass is obviously going to help significantly in your CO2 footprint.
Well, I guess with our Greener Business Alliance, we work with our suppliers on how we can achieve better efficiencies and better environmental sustainability with all our producers, suppliers, whatever it might be. So no doubt we're talking to our glass suppliers as well and seeing what things we can come up with them to improve their energy efficiency.
What sort of things have you implemented in Australia to help you?
It's all based around the environmental management system, so which is the ISO 14001 accredited. We just look at a whole of business lifecycle approach to environmental sustainability, and the environmental management system is made up of five key pillars, and that is the product stewardship, land stewardship, greenhouse challenge, the environmental citizenship, waste management as well. So
is there anything in particular you're doing in the vineyard to manage your waste, or
a variety of things? What sort of waste, though? I mean, is it? Water waste. We've got contingency plans for wastewater, recycling our water in our wineries. In our Moppa winery, we have an amazingly low, wine to water ratio. So we're below 2 liters per 1 liter of wine.
2 liters of water.
Water per 1 liter of wine, which is very very low, and virtually not. no drop of wine goes down the drain where we don't look at whether we can use it again in some other aspect, whether it is for cleaning or whatever it might be. So every drop of water.
Drop of water, yeah. You said drop of wine.
I was drop of, say. Yeah, every drop of water, yeah. So, and we just sort of see where we can reuse it and how we best can reuse it. And that's how we've got the ratio down so low, I guess.
What about other packaging? Like you see pallets of glasses turning up. They must be packaged in something. Do you recycle the packaging?
Yeah,
do you specify the type of packaging you require? Because you're big enough to be...
I would say so. And I mean, again, that's working with our suppliers, I guess, and seeing how we can, you know, how we can help them reduce their waste and how they can supply us a greener, more sustainable product. The amount of product that we use that's in our packaging, I think it's 98% of what we use is from recycled material, a paper waste. So a very, very high level of what we buy into the winery is recycled for labels, cartons, things like that. So I guess as far as like, you know, the plastic around glass and whatever else and the pallets, I guess it's just working with those suppliers and seeing what the alternatives are where we can maintain quality assurance in our product, but also, you know, maintaining the sustainability of the environment.
Yeah, the life cycle model seems to be more about just being aware of things and making tweaks here and there, is that?
Well, it's a dynamic model, I guess. It's not, there's no ultimate way to go. And I think it's looking at every level of production and consumption and how it interacts with each other, I guess. So, I mean, we've got the environmental management system, which is the core, or the environmental program, which is the core of the life cycle model. We use that, and then we can develop it to the different sort of levels of production, whether it's in the vineyard, in the winery.
One of the things that came up about 6 months ago was the Times wrote an article on, don't buy your wine from New Zealand, Australia, Chile, all those sort of places. Buy it from France because it's closer, therefore the food miles are less.
Yeah, I mean, food miles is, it's obviously something that the UK consumers jumped on board to, but it's I think they've jumped on board. It's the lowest common denominator, I guess, in environmental sustainability. It's easy to understand and it's easy for people to associate with. But really, I mean, you've got to look at it as far as inefficient miles. Inefficient miles is sticking a pallet of wine on the back of a lorry from the south of France to bring it into London, whereas an inefficient food mile would be sticking, you know, thousands and thousands of pallets on a boat.
I used the same numbers that Times used to calculate it out, and it was just south of Burgundy, you know, top end of Rhone Valley, south of Burgundy, that it was more efficient to truck in than bring a bottle of wine over on a container from New Zealand. So, you know, as long as you're getting your wines from Burgundy, Champagne, Chablis, you're fine. You can bring it over, but otherwise, you're better off New Zealand and Australia.
You know, the food miles thing, the consumer has jumped on board of that, and they're very aware of it. So I think it's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, and I think it's fantastic that the consumer's actually interested in a product that's environmentally sustainable. But I think we need to take it to the next step now where that they have to know a little bit more about this and really look into it and sort of look at a greater picture rather than something that's really sort of just one-dimensional, which is a pallet of wine on a truck to my table and that's it. There's nothing before or after that. Whereas really you need to look at it from how that wine was produced, how those grapes were grown, what happens to that packaging after the consumer drinks it. Is the local council collecting that glass and recycling it? Are they taking that cart and recycling it? I mean, we need to look, sort of spread the view a bit further than just the pure transport of a product, because really it's only a very small part of, you know, the problem, I guess. And, you know, the carbon emissions from transporting wine, it's a small percentage of the life cycle of that wine. The production is using a lot of carbon dioxide or releasing a lot of carbon dioxide. So we need to look at it in a broader sort of perspective rather than just transportation, I think. So.
I think one of the guys who introduced you, Stephen, what was it, Stephen?
Stephen Strawn, yeah.
Stephen Strawn. He's saying 55% of CO2 comes from the production side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
45% from shipping, bottling.
And I think, really, it's the actual transportation and shipping of the product is a very, very small part of what the of carbon emissions. So,
Yulumbra Negotiates, Hillsmith family. You also own Oxford Landing, which is a pretty big brand in the UK.
It is a very big brand, yeah. And we're doing a lot of work there in setting aside land for wildlife sanctuary and replanting to natural bushland as a sink, I guess, for that carbon dioxide. And we have a project starting this year, 2008, where we're going to start replanting. And I think that's going to be an ongoing thing. But it just sort of, I guess, shows our commitment towards trying to, you know, improve our sustainability and provide greenhouse sinks. But yeah, so that's a really exciting project, and I think that's going to be sort of carried out for the next few years.
Is the idea to improve the native plants?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Animals? Yeah, maintain, you know, first of all, replanting more trees, greater carbon sinks, and also, yeah, encouraging native wildlife, fauna, flora, whatever it might be, back into that area, and just rehabilitating, I guess, the ground that's been left to sort of, you know, has been intensively farmed. We haven't used it for vineyard. It's not suitable for vineyard, but you know, it's more than suitable for replanting to natural vegetation. So
I must admit, I hate the concept of trees as carbon sinks. I really loathe carbon sinks to tree, because whilst the tree's growing, it's soaking up carbon.
Yeah.
But after that, it doesn't soak up anymore, and then you've got to maintain it in perpetuity forever.
Yeah.
Without, so that the carbon doesn't get released. So
ultimately, I mean, by going back to natural vegetation, you're rehabilitating the land. So it's not going to have a negative effect. It is going to have a positive, an overall positive effect. And I mean, I guess a lot of people are using, you know, replanting and carbon sinks as a way to offset their carbon, you know, their carbon footprint, I guess. It's not efficient, and it doesn't really look at the bigger model. I can buy as many carbon credits, or I can plant as many trees, but, you know, I want to look at my whole business sustainably and see how you can, you know, really, you go to the crux of the problem, I guess, and how you can better improve it. And I think, you know, natural vegetation, and that's the way to be going. And I mean, we're using, you know, indigenous plants to that area. So I really think that's where the benefit's going to come. And it's not going to hurt the land, and it's only really going to bring the land back into balance, I guess, and nurturing the soil and the surrounds.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Chris. Thanks very much for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris. This life cycle model appears on the surface to be very thorough. But after talking to Chris, it appeared to me that it hasn't really driven any revolutionary ideas within Yulumbri yet, other than good stewardship of land, so important to many high-end producers these days. Next week, we're going to be talking with Mike Paxton from Paxton Wines in McLaren Vale on this niche, coolish climate wine region in South Australia. But before we finish up, how are you getting on with the quote? My only regret in life is that I did not drink more champagne. What a terrible thing to have to say. But the person in our quote did work hard, and the branch of economics that bears his name is known as Keynesian economics. I am talking about John Maynard Keynes. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott, and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.